following interview was conducted with Mary Louise Foster for the Purdue University Oral History Project. It took place on Wednesday, October the 4th, 2006, at her office in Matthews Hall. The interviewer is Catherine Marquis, the Oral History Librarian. Welcome. Let's start by asking you to tell us where you were born, your parents and early life and community and siblings, if any, and go ahead with that.
I was born in Fayette County, Indiana, Connersville, in Fayette Memorial Hospital. My parents were farmers and had lived in that community all their lives, had gone to school together and married. And many people in the community were family relatives. I had twin sisters. They were 5 years younger than I, and we all went to the same community high school, which of course is a consolidated school now, but we went through all the grades of school there. And at the time I was about the fourth or fifth grade, they built a new school. My father was on the school board at that time, so we got in on the plans for building a school and all the complaints in the community about spending extra money on schools and so forth. But my mother and dad were strong on education, so the school got built and we were the better for it because it was a nice small community high school. In fact, my high school, saying small, I tell students now that I'm from a small school, and when I say small, I mean my graduating class was 12, six boys and six girls.
Was your grade school, what was the grade school like? Was that?
It was always in the same, it was a building when I started school that my mother had gone to school in, and my dad. So it was an old frame, two-story building with a gymnasium built on top floor, and it had been a school for a number of years. I would have to figure how many, but when my mother went to school, it was not a new school then, because it was a fine new school because they had done away with the one-room schools all around the township, uh-huh, and built this one school.
When were you born?
February 18,
1921. Okay. All right. And then, was it grade school? Was it close to home? Could you walk?
We could walk. It was out of sight of home because it was on the other side of a hill, and so my mother never liked for us to walk. So she would take us to school in the car, or she would take us to the end of a long, long lane to catch the bus. The bus did not have to stop for us because we were too close to the school, but a farmer friend was a school bus driver, and he worked with my dad, and so he was very glad to
give you
stop and pick us up.
Sure, that's right.
And mother didn't want to go to school and take pie to the teachers or some of the things she loved to do.
Sure. Now, your high school, what specific courses did you take in high school? Was it a general course or?
General courses. No college prep, of course. No home economics at that time in the school. The foreign language was Latin. I had typing. And the typing class was taught by the coach, who didn't know how to type. And so the girls taught themselves while the boys and the coach did.
You said there were only 12 people in your class?
In my high school class. My senior class.
What was the size of the school overall?
Well, I don't know. We'd have to figure. But it was not
pretty small.
It was a small school. Yeah.
Sure. Uh-huh. Okay. Were there any teachers that you recall made any impact on you when you were in high school?
Oh, yes.
You want to make a comment?
My first grade teacher was uh, friend for life. Her son became a lawyer, and he would come to school and give old lectures to us just to be things that something new for the students. And,
sure.
My name is one of the interesting things in my history, because I know who has left me a message or who has is trying to get in touch with me by whether they call me Mary, Mary Louise, Mary Lou, or MLF. Because when I was in my first grade, there were four Mary Louises, and the teacher was Mary Louise. So we all had to take our name that we were going to use. So I became Mary, because another little girl was Mary Louise. And my family, still to this day, only calls me Mary. I have nieces and nephews that don't know who Mary Louise is. And I had one group of cousins that always called me Mary Louise, and nothing ever different. Then when I came to college, of course, Mary Louise got cut to Mary Lou. So I became Mary Lou. There are a lot of people that only, they think that's my name. There's no Louise to it. So that's the way that
how it came about.
Things go. That
I learned in preparing for the interview that you graduated from Purdue in 42. What was your major, and how did you happen to choose Purdue?
Oh, I chose Purdue because of 4-H. My first trip to Purdue was the 4-H Roundup. And I decided then that I had to go to college because I wanted to be just like my home demonstration agent, Virginia Brown. And at that time, you had to teach 2 years before you could become a home demonstration agent. And of course, that terminology now has become home educators. But so I started out do the teacher route because I wanted to be to work in 4-H.
Did you reside on campus?
I resided. That's another very different story for me. I've had experience in about all types of campus living. I lived in the residence halls as a freshman. Lived in, at that time it was North Hall, which is now Bruce Shealy. And then West Hall was completed at the end of my freshman year, and I moved over to West, and while I was there, it became Wood Hall. So now it's all the halls there together are Windsor, and I was very fortunate. Last year, I was invited over to Windsor just to experience a new eating service there, a food service, and thought it was, very different than what, of course, when I was in undergraduate is when the you had table service 3 times a day, and we thought it was just great when they put in a cafeteria for us that we could go to breakfast on our own. Otherwise, we had to wait for the head resident to enter the dining room. We had to wait till she finished at her table. And her table was supposed to be filled first. We didn't have, that's one thing, we didn't have assigned seats. But you were supposed to be in line so that the first few people, 10 or whatever, were at the table, sat at the head resident's table. And so you had to sit there with her. The whole dining room had to wait until the head resident was ready to leave. We had men waiters, student waiters, and not dress every meal, except some meals we did have fancy dress, we really had to dress up.
Very different than today.
Very, very different, which makes me very interested in to see how the food service has changed.
Did you have, then you were served your meals?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Did you experience any, was there in a residence hall where they did have cafeteria?
No.
So all the time you were here was all served?
Because at that time, you see, there was only just three women's residence halls.
Now, you were here during the... So can you tell us how was the campus in the 40s, and that was during the time of the war and afterwards? What was the campus?
Well, another thing, back, if I can back
sure.
up to the...
Please do.
To the... where I lived. Yeah. At the time I was an undergraduate, a group of girls from one of the corridors that I lived on in, I think, North Hall, freshman year, decided to form a co-op house. And they formed a co-op house over across from Matthews Hall. And they were my very best friends. I wasn't a member of the co-op, but I spent as much time, or more than some of the co-op people, and participated as much in the preparation and the other work around the co-op house. That was called the Antigonish House, and I still, to this, till they, I think, disbanded having reunions, was invited to their reunions over the years, because I was just a part of that co-op in as a guest, I guess you would call it. And then as a graduate student, and I was a became a financial advisor to help a local sorority, one of the sorority houses, and then they made me an honorary member. So I know about all the types of campus living, except living out in apartments, which I do now.
Was that co-op, would that have been the first one on campus?
No, I don't believe it
was. There were others at that
time? There were others at that time.
Okay, uh-huh. Okay, all right. Uh-huh. Well, then going on about, what was the, tell us a little bit about the campus life when you were here as a student, as an undergraduate?
Oh,
in the 40s, late
30s? In the 40s?
Yeah.
Well, you didn't wear slacks, you didn't wear shorts. You were always... dressed in campus clothes, which were dressy clothes,
sure.
But compared to some of the
right.
clothes that students wear now, you never went in anything that you would...
It was more dressed.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Uh-huh.
And when you go to the music hall, that was dressed also, even gloves and hats. Gloves and hats were in my day, too.
Interesting. Were there any professors that made an impact on you that you kept in touch with or could tell us a little bit about?
Many of them, really.
What was your major then?
Home economics education.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Uh-huh. And at that time, most everybody did. Either you took dietetics training or home ec education training, or general home economics, which didn't prepare you to do any professional job. You could get any kind of job, but it would not be one of the professions of like a dietitian or a teacher. And then when I went on to do my master's after 10 years of teaching in Indiana high schools, I continued with vocational education and home management and family economics, mm-hmm. which is really the same thing as I'm working in now in consumer economics.
I see. Okay. And were you in any specific clubs or student organizations when you were here?
Well, everybody in home economics belonged to the home ec club.
Okay.
That was just part of it.
Sure.
And I belonged to campus club for the church I belong to. And
okay.
That was about the extent of the club. Well, we always participated in anything 4-H going on. Those of us, most of us, were very active in 4-H.
And then when the 4-H from your area came, you probably were involved with
yes,
them. Right?
Yes,
and they were that made sort of home people coming.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's
a big organization.
Yes.
Yeah,
and I had a 4-H scholarship. I just wouldn't have gone to college.
Or
had,
did you have
hadn't been
was that
4-H.
What helped with 4-H scholarship? Is that
yes.
what you got?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Because I went to State Fair, Indiana State Fair Girls School, and got a scholarship from that. as well as my judging awards and just a general 4-H.
Do you still go to any of the 4-H programs at all?
Oh, yes. I'm very, very, and my niece, our nieces and nephews that are 4-H leaders and very active in 4-H.
That's very good. You keep that, kept that on.
Yes, as I say, my first experience was to come to Roundup, and I had some part in a presentation. I could tell you what it is now, but the main thing of that time was that I remember was making this presentation from the stage of Fowler Hall. And of course, Fowler Hall was a building in itself because it was the big meeting place before Elliott. See, Elliott Hall of Music was being built when I was in school.
Fowler, what sort of presentations did you do? Was it for the 4-H?
Yes, for the 4-H Roundup.
And they would have programs in there?
That's right.
Okay.
Yes, because that was the only meeting place to get the whole group together.
They didn't use
Because we didn't have Stewart Center. We didn't have a union.
Union was built.
Well, but we didn't have access to having meeting kinds of, like we could have in Fowler.
Sure, okay. How about Chauncey Village? How has that changed?
Oh.
What was it like? Of course,
Vaughn's was the post office. And there
but
was
Harry's was here.
Harry's was there.
Yeah.
The dime store was there. Was with the Woolworths, I believe. We had a grocery, a pharmacy, two or three clothing stores. You know, almost like the stores in the mall that appeal to the young people. There were clothing stores like that in the village.
Okay.
Three or four that I can remember of.
Yes. I remember a couple of them when I first came here.
Yeah. Also, I'm still a Silk Bank at the same bank that I was introduced by my college roommate. My college roommate's mother took me and helped me open an account at the Purdue National Bank, you know. And so I've gone through all of the many changes of the name of the bank. from there to Chase.
So have others been. That's Sullivan and Potter.
And you know, the safety deposit boxes are in the area that used to be the bank. All that there was to it was just that little triangle there at the end where you went in and the tellers were there and so forth. And I'm always just amazed how little that looks, how small that is when you go to the lockbox and there's just that little space. This used to be the bank.
This was it, right?
That's right.
tell me, now, following graduation, you mentioned this earlier. I guess you went into teaching, or what did you do after you graduated from Purdue?
Yes, I had this good friend from the residence hall days whose uncle was a trustee, a township trustee of Pittsboro Township out west of Indianapolis. And the other thing I haven't mentioned that some people don't realize, when I was in school, it was during the war, and if you dropped out to go home for summer, you might not get back in school. Some sailor may have taken up your space because we had lots of military men on campus. And so after my freshman year, I didn't take any summers off. I just went to school straight through. Therefore, I graduated in December, and I was very tired of school. And that was back in ration gasoline and tire days. And my dad had saved gasoline and tires to come and haul me and all my belongings back to Connersville. And on Christmas Day, I think it was, I got a telephone call from Pittsboro. Can you come for an interview? Would you come? And we're in problems with our school. We need a home ec teacher. because our teacher went to see her husband in Texas, and she's not coming back. So, with the tire and the gasoline situation as it was, we made it back to Pittsboro. I interviewed and took my belongings back there and taught there for a semester. My mother became ill, and I then came home to take care of her in the summer that year, and resigned from Pittsboro. And then again, she got better, and I didn't need to be at home all the time. And the local school was in dire straits for a teacher. They didn't have home economics, but I, being a home ec graduate in those days, you could teach science. You had to have, and you had a biology license, and you had to have another teaching license. And I had chosen civics and economics and that kind of thing. So I went to Harrisburg School to teach physics and chemistry, both of which I didn't learn until I taught them, because yeah, I was not very, very good at any of the science courses, except biology. I liked biology. I could do that one. I taught health classes. I taught a civics class. You know, I did all these things. The Latin teacher at that time had started a seventh grade home ec class, because Indiana law had said every school had to teach home economics in the seventh or eighth grade. Well, a Latin teacher and was not trained in home economics and didn't want to be trained in home economics. And she had been my teacher. She was an elderly lady, and so I left the end of the job of starting a home economics program there. And then I got really brave, and by the time I left, in about 3 years, I had started a boys' home economics class, which was, you know, an unheard of thing in those days. Because, see, when I was in here at school in Purdue, there was one boy in my graduating class. He was an institution management major, and he became official in the food stores for Purdue after he graduated. This was my beginning of teaching, was teaching science and being glad that I knew how to teach home economics.
Oh, yes.
Then I went on from home economics from then on.
Very good. Now, I learned that you got your master's degree in family economics in 1954. What prompted your decision to come back and do graduate work?
I went to, from Harrisburg School, I went to Newcastle Junior High School, and I taught there 3 or 4 years, and the principal called me in one day, and he says, it's time for you to get your master's. And, of course, at that time, you had to get either so many hours or a master's to keep your teaching license. And he said, you choose when you want to leave, but we want you to go get your master's. So I came to Purdue to get my master's.
Did you take a leave from school? Or?
No, I didn't. Then when I was finishing, one of the major things I wanted to do in my master's work in education was to train student teachers. And the opportunity I had was to teach at Delphi while I was finishing my master's, and had student teachers there. And then when they said, when Purdue called on me to come back to work in the home management area, I said, oh, I don't want to leave student teachers. You know, I like working with student teachers. And then I finally came to my senses and thought, well, if I come back, work in the home management house, I'll work with every one of the student teachers. And I get to train them on how to be a laboratory manager, So that's what we did in the home management house.
Okay.
Because by that time, home economics education was about the only part of the school that was a required course for.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it was a lot of students at that time, but food and nutrition and the housing and the child development students were not taking home management house at that time.
Was your degree in your master's, was it from in home economics education rather than from the School of
Education? No, it was from home economics.
Home economics, okay. Right. And then you became a faculty member in 1955.
Yes.
How did that, they wanted you to come back? Is that how it came about?
In the home, yes.
Okay.
They wanted me
okay.
to work with Dr. Fitzsimmons in home management houses.
And that is that when... Is that when you moved into varsity, do you think? Or no, you moved into the home management?
I lived
okay.
in the home management houses.
Okay.
Yeah, there was a house on State Street. It was an old farmhouse. That was house one. And it was right across from, at that time, the dairy farm. And then on to farther where Fowler House is, was the apple orchards and the... poultry farms.
Oh, my Lord.
So, you know, we were just out in the country, really.
Oh.
It's just very hard to see that as you drive around campus now. But I constantly think of that, of the things that used to go on in these areas. Then the house, too, was an old house that was on that circle that goes around to the residence hall. And then house three and four were smaller brick houses that were on the lawns of, Doomy and Sheely. And one of the houses, we first used house one, two, and four, because three was still occupied by professor's wife. Those two brick houses were moved from the site of when they built Cary Hall. And the professors then, they moved the houses for them, and they could live there their lifetimes, and their wives could live there, their spouses could live there too. So it was always, we were very friendly with the lady that lived in house three, but it was, people always ask us, you know, why didn't we use that house? Well, that wasn't ours yet.
We're waiting.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Right, yeah. Now, my question, Lillian Gilbreth. We talked a little bit about that on the phone. You've met Lillian?
Oh, yes.
Tell us a little bit about your interaction with Lillian.
She was a very charming lady, as everybody I think knows, but the thing that I enjoyed most about her, the mailboxes were where we congregated to go into
what,
the dining.
No, excuse me for interrupting. What hall?
This was Wood Hall. West.
She would stay in Wood when she
was. Yeah, she was staying there.
Excuse me for
when she was. No, that's right. She just belonged there in my mind. When she was on campus, she lived there. And she would eat in the dining hall with the rest of us, abide by the rules like the rest of us had to abide by. And she would get her mail while waiting to go into the dining room. And she would ask us, well, she'd read her mail, and she would make these, you know, comments about, what do they want me to do about that? She said, would turn to us and say, what would you do? What would your mother do if you ask her? And then she'd ask us the question one of the of her dozen children had written her about. Because she was just astounded as to, why would they ask me that? How can I answer that, you know? And she would turn to us. And of course, most of us would have some comment about, well, I know what my mother would say.
That must have been an interesting time to pick up your mail.
And she, oh yes, And, of course, we always liked to sit at her table.
Did you get a chance? Did you sit at the
table? Oh, yes. You could, and she would sit around wherever she wanted to. And we would
there was space to get there.
We hoped that we could get to sit with her. Uh-huh.
Did any of her children ever visit her or come with her when she was
not
on campus?
Not that I can remember.
Okay.
Now, they may have, but there's never anything in my memory.
Were her stays very long, or did this vary?
I think it varied.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Maybe sometimes she was. And then sometimes we would miss her of our, she had luncheon meetings or something like that. She didn't eat there. But she'd be getting her mail, and then we'd always be sad that she was going to leave before the dining room opened, so we'd talk with. And then we would have after dinner lectures and series.
Activities in the residence hall?
In the residence hall, and she would fit many times with a speaker.
Did she ever give a program at all?
Oh, yes.
Oh, did she?
Yes.
What would she do?
Well, she would just, if there was a certain topic that was being talked about at that time, she would join in on that. But then she would always, give her views, or she would sometimes talk about other universities she's been to, and experiences she's had with other students.
May I ask you this? Do you think the students knew who she was, really?
No.
Oh.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. It was just, well...
Now, the students that I have taught since that have had, through when I taught organization and work simplification, we used Cheaper by the Dozen book and, sections of it, because we... That was one of the assignments for student teachers that I was working with, to develop lessons around the Gilbreth theories and base it on the book, so it would make it more interesting to high school students. Mm-hmm. And so I was looking through the file there today on the Gilbreths in my file here, and I have a copy of the lesson plan and the Cheaper by the Dozen book. And that's when I've had students working on here in the office, and I would ask them to get something from the file, or be working on something, preparing something for that file, the history file. They were always just fascinated. They didn't know the book, but they knew the movie, modern students.
Well, let me ask you, mm-hmm. then, if she gave some talks, they just didn't realize. Did they know she was a visitor on campus?
They knew she was something,
body
important. Yeah,
okay.
She wasn't just somebody walking in the door.
Because she wasn't there all the time.
No, but I don't think we have the idea of just how important she was.
Mm-hmm. In retrospect.
Yes, right.
Okay. Now, Amelia Earhart, did you?
I did know Amelia Earhart. She was here. And, well, she's here after I came to school, of course, but she doesn't, living in the hall and teaching and as active as when I came, as she was when a cousin of mine was here and lived in
I think
Hall.
It was Doomy Hall.
Doomy Hall is where she lived, uh-huh.
Right.
And she had lots of stories to tell us. And then my cousin learned to fly at that time because of the interest of...
I'll have to get your cousin to share those things on there. Talking a little bit, there was one thing that I came across. Purdue Retailer, that was a retail institute that did some sort of a newsletter. Do they still have that, or you don't know? That was around 1988. There was something called the Purdue Retailer I happened to come across.
Well, I think it is now called our CFS newsletter.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Because now it's... The whole department is not separated out. I think that's what that refers to.
Now, talking about your teaching, has the department, you've been in the same department, or have there been departmental changes? Tell us a little bit about your teaching.
Many changes, of course, because the whole school has changed name and from school to college and so forth. And I've never resisted those changes like some people. We still have, I work with the ambassadors for the school, and give them a little history of the school always when they start out. And one of the things we try to impress on them, you're going to find people that will blame you as young people. Why don't we have home economics anymore? And then most people can't even figure out how, you know, to say CFS and Consumer Family Sciences. And that is just is still a very much of a problem for many of our alums. And we still have people that resist that change. But through the years, I've found it interesting, particularly being here in Matthews Hall, the different uses have been made of the different parts of this building. You see, before Stone Hall, everything was in this building, the cafeteria and all of that, all the art department and so forth. Now, there was another building where Bering is now, just a very small building that was one of the first buildings of the university that we our overflow from home economics was child development on the ground floor and art department on the second floor. And where the fountain is out here between Stone and Bering and University Hall, that was the playground, you know, for the child development before it became a parking lot. And in fact, it had apple trees in it and so forth. The railroad ran along where the sidewalk is out here, taking coal down to the engineering administration building now, which is where all the heating plant was. And that was one of the problems, is to get the children into the playground before it was time for the train to come, one way or the other. But of course, the children like to have it come just to be going across to the playground or back to the building just as the train was coming. So, because they would blow the whistle and the engineers would wave at them and holler at them. And they even got so they knew their names, you know, and would call the children's names out, or the children would call the engineer's name. And so it was always a fun time to be working with the child development program at that time. But, of course, the auditorium here in Matthews has been the same. It's still a big lecture hall for the whole university to use. Well, it has changed, of course, in furnishings, but I remember Dean Matthews was teaching the housing course and would come down the center aisle to teach the course, and all of my classes, of course, were here in this one of the other two buildings, mm-hmm. child development building or Matthews. The third floor was the food labs, the second floor was the clothing labs, and the art department was in this building part of the time. Institution management was on the first floor.
Where you said there were eating facilities in this
building?
Oh,
yes. The institution management labs were down in the section is now the computer lab.
Was the basement used at all? Is there a basement to this building?
No, there's no basement.
There is not.
No,
okay.
It's just the first, just the
just three
floors.
Okay.
Yeah, that's how we can tell when students come wandering through, freshmen hunting their class in Math 601. Well, there's no sixth floor in here. You have the wrong building. This is Matthews, not Math.
Right, yeah.
We get this all the time.
We get people looking for, coming to Stewart, and they're looking for Stanley Coulter.
Yes.
They have an abbreviation.
Oh,
SC,
that's
you
right.
Know.
Yeah.
So we get the
same thing. Uh-huh.
Right, yeah. Tell us a little bit about your interaction with the students. How's that changed over time?
Oh, it has changed in a lot of ways. But students still like to have a university, either administrator, teacher, graduate student, whatever your capacity is, interested in their particular problem. They'd like this one-on-one. Now, they'll say they want to do their own registration, they want to do their own thing online, but when it comes to a question or something, they want somebody they can go to, and they like that one-on-one. I was working with a young man that's in science now. He's decided he wants to come into financial counseling and planning. He's done his homework. He looked up on the internet a career choice survey, and he took that. It works out. He's working the right direction. Finances is what he should be. He wants to do a minor in economics because he just thinks that's the most interesting thing there is. And it was interesting how much new technology he had used on his own to decide where his career. Oh, he's already been over to CCO and knows how to write a resume and has registered over there as a freshman. But he now is ready to make a change. And he was most grateful for the time I sat down and explained to him what courses he would need to take, what kind of jobs he could get in financial planning. And it shows me that students still want some hands-on personal touch.
Do you think that technology has helped them in some of their career planning? And the students
yes.
that come now are much more techie-oriented?
Oh, yes, yes.
Because they have it at the lower levels.
Yes, uh-huh.
And that makes a difference, too.
Yes, when we first started having a requirement for taking a computer science course, which was very elementary, they didn't have, at that time, they didn't have, many high schools didn't have those facilities, and students didn't have them at home. And this beginning course, you could ease their fear of doing something like learning to use a computer by saying, well, you learned how to print your name out, you'll have, you know, all these things that will prepare you to do certain things in your professional life. And so it was, you know, after a while, you didn't have to convince somebody that they needed to take a computer science course.
They figured they would need it.
Yes, yes. Or they came and already knew more than I know about it.
Exactly, yeah.
Because they come, I know my little first and second grade nieces and nephews, you know, they're computer smart.
Sometimes they can help us out, too.
Yes. You know,
right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
They don't know what our problem is.
Did you ever, were we ever a faculty fellow?
No, I wasn't.
Have you been
yes, I know about the program, and I think it's great.
Have you been an advisor to the student organizations within the school?
I didn't go into the faculty fellow program early because I was still involved in the management house, and I was a faculty fellow there. yes, I've been the honorary club, Kappa Alpha Crown New. I've been the advisor for that. Other, you know, various clubs, and then I work very closely with the financial planning club now as far as, posting notices about their meetings or giving out.
You're not the advisor for the club.
I'm not, no, that's a faculty person.
Mm-hmm.
But, and then any other, like the PRO, the retail management group, I have some retail management students as advisees, and I, you know, provide them with information about their mm-hmm. professional, their organization. So I'm very interested in seeing that students, and that's one of the things I told this young man the other day, that even before he gets his papers changed over so he's a and registered in our school, he could still go to financial planning meetings and meet the students mm-hmm. and take part in
yeah.
the meetings.
You mentioned earlier about the ambassadors. Do you, or you must have some involvement with
yes.
the school ambassadors?
Yes.
Are they, was it on 1 year? How is that set up?
It's usually a 1 year sometimes. And I know this year we have somebody that is a third year ambassador, which is rather unusual. It's usually one or a two-year thing. It's usually during the junior, senior year.
I was going to ask you what
yeah.
it was junior and senior
yeah.
year.
Right.
Okay.
All right. Well, I think that is you know, is covers all the majors in the college. And we try to keep it as even as in
with the
various
within the departments.
Departments, yeah. So there's somebody, if you're going to an area that wants to know about institution management or home management or the fashion, that you have somebody as an ambassador, at least one or two ambassadors that are
in that
informed in that program. Uh-huh.
Right. Okay. Well, I think we'll stop for now, if that's okay. And following interview with part two of an interview with Mary Louise Foster for the Purdue University Library Oral History Program took place on Wednesday, October the 12th, 2006, at her office in Matthews Hall. This is the continuation. The interviewer is Catherine Marquis, the Oral History Librarian. I want to ask you a couple things about does the department ever have an internship program? At all to the school or to your department? Did they
yes,
have it? Tell us a little bit about that.
The CSR department, each of the majors in that department has an internship, you know, related to the major topics, and they vary from credit hours of 1 hour to 3 hours. The different ones have different requirements. It's all 140 hours of work for each hour of credit, and it is a requirement for every student in CSR.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. You talked about the student ambassadors, and that's kind of an active thing, isn't
yes,
it? That's
yes.
really been going quite a while. And then one of the programs that I read about was a student chapter of the Society of Consumer Affairs Professionalism, and they had some tie-in with the Fight Back Foundation, which was formed in 1991. Is that still
yes.
going? Or?
Yes. Dr. Widows is our department chairman, and he was very active in that when it first started as a student organization, and he was here formally as a staff member. He was away a while, now he's back as a department head, and they're still active in it. And he has recently gone to a convention and was saying, when I was telling him about the interviews that we were having, he was saying, well, he knows how it is to be first on the line of doing things and the oldest one in the organization, because they had been coming to him about the organization as both as a student and as a professional organization.
Okay. What
so
exactly?
It's still going.
It's still going. What sort of, is there a chapter here?
There's a chapter here,
yeah.
And the kinds of things that they do, I was participating in the national programs, it's a small group, but it's still viable.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Tell us a little bit about your career as a faculty member and then how it has changed somewhat since you've retired.
Well, I started out, you know, as a teaching assistant in the home management house when I was doing my master's, and then taught high school home economics in addition to completing my master's, and working with student teachers. I think I have told you before that I thoroughly enjoyed working with student teachers at Delphi High School, and didn't want to give that up to come to the university when they asked me to come back to work in the home management houses. Then I finally got smart and thought, well, I can work with all the student teachers if I come back, because at that time the main part of the whole management program was working with the education department of home economics. And so I was a house advisor and supervised the graduate students and taught the course from 54 to 83, something like that, when we closed the home management houses. And we, for a time, taught the course over in Stonehall as a laboratory course. And then when it became time for me to retire in 87, after we had closed the home management houses, I had been an academic advisor in the main school office. And so I was out of work about probably a month, and Dr. Feinberg, at that time was the department head in CSR, and he was too busy to do the advising of the students that were assigned to him, and he asked me if I would do it, because I was retired from advising for the school. So I did that. Other professors discovered that Dr. Feinberg was freeing up some of his time by not having to advise students, and so they said, "Well, you do my students." Well, as it turned out, I got to advising all the students in CSR. And at that time, we developed a peer advising program where I worked with seven or eight students, juniors and seniors usually, and supervised them while they were advising students and registering students and helping them work out problems. So that was an interesting part. I really enjoyed working with peer advisors, and I still hear from them as they have gone through their careers and married and had families, and I still keep in touch with that group of students. Then as the department grew and one person couldn't take care of all the advising, and they hired because I really wasn't hired as an academic advisor, I was just a part-time helper that was working pretty much full-time, which was my choice. I thoroughly enjoyed working with students, because in the home management houses, all my teaching experience had been working with small groups, and to me that was the best way of reaching students, was one-on-one kinds of thing. So that's the reason I've always enjoyed advising, and the reason I have continued doing so even into my retirement. But we now have a full-time academic advisor, and three or four of us in the school assist, because it's even too much. The department has grown to beyond one advisor doing it all by themselves.
Could you back off a little bit on the home management house? You state you lived in there.
You lived in the house.
Okay. Uh-huh. And then was there a faculty person or in each of the houses?
There would be a graduate student.
A graduate student.
Home management graduate student. Home management, family economics.
But would you just be over the house?
I'd be over the one house, and I also coordinated the graduate students so that three other houses were operated in the same fashion. Yes, we always had it. Of course, that was a requirement to have a faculty person or an adult
in the house,
living with the students.
Mm-hmm. And what was the nature of the lab course that was this in Stonehall? What sort of work?
We tried to follow very much the same pattern as in the home management house, except they weren't living there, but they had the same kinds of experiences of planning meals and buying the food, cleaning process and teaching the laboratory and having social activities. We would invite people for lunches or teas or on some other kinds of activity. And then in addition to that, because we weren't fulfilling all the mission of the course, we started working out in the community, like at a, with the schools. We might be working with schools that had students that needed assistance in taking care of them, their health and their grooming, that kind of thing. Wabash Center. We taught classes at Wabash Center where they work with handicapped students. And
is that still going on? Do they still do that?
No, we do not do that now through the department. I'm sure other parts of the college have activities at Wabash, but as far as consumer science and retailing, we don't.
Okay. You certainly served under several department heads, haven't you?
Yes.
And also heads of the school. How has that affected changes?
Starting with as an undergraduate and into my first years of teaching, Dean Matthews was a professor and the dean of the school, and then I've worked under every dean since, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was in Brazil, Dean Vale was the dean of the school, and she was assisting there and was visiting in Brazil at the school of Souza when I arrived. So it was an interesting time because I worked with Dean Vale here on campus, and then in Brazil she was the dean of the school at the time we were working down there.
That's where my next thing is. Tell us a little bit about the Brazil and how you happened to go there. And
well, it almost stems from the home management experience also. There had been no home economics. Well, of course, Purdue was helping organize a land-grant college after the Purdue pattern. Since 1952, when some extension people, an agent and a home economist and an ag agent, were the people that started it.
Whereabouts in South America is this?
In the state of Minas Gerais, in the interior of, in the mining state. And it's very much interior. It was two mountain ranges in and working in the third mountain range. So it was very far from Rio in distance and climate and so forth. It was very...
What was your impression
unique,
the first time you saw it
very
when you arrived there?
Experience. Well, of course, I was pretty well schooled in what was going on there because back to how I happened to go, I was... home management house advisor when Cordell Hamilton, one of the home economists in Brazil, was home on home leave, and she was not much to my dismay, I had no idea this was in the works, was hunting somebody to recommend to go down to take her place and to add one more home economist on the staff there. From Purdue, so they asked me to invite the steering committee for the Vasosa project, the professors here on campus, to the home management houses for lunch. So all the various home management houses had two or three people for lunch, and I was of course one of the advisors, and so I had no idea they were interviewing me to go to Brazil. So when that offer came, I was surprised, but I, of course, knew very much about it because we had worked with Dr. Hamilton and I knew what was going on in the project there. What they needed was the home economist that was in the home management professor, consumer economics professor from Purdue, was getting ready to leave, and her time was, she had fulfilled all the time she could spend there. And they were needing somebody to go and develop a home management program, like a home management house, because they didn't have a laboratory. And of course, it was very difficult to do that kind of thing. It was not their culture to for the student and the young woman to operate her own house, because she had maids and servants that that did the laundry and did the food shopping and took care of the children and so forth. So it was a challenge to develop something so new, but Brazilians were very open to what Purdue had to suggest, and so they were very much ready to make over what had been a storage shed for the gardening equipment and the horticulture gardens, to make us a temporary home management house. Now, the students didn't live in. This was located adjacent to the first woman's dormitory that had ever been devised and built and put into operation in Brazil. Purdue, of course, took their residence hall ideas along with them. So we had the women's residence hall, and the students lived there at night, but they would come to the home management house and prepare the meals and do the laundry, which most of them had never done any laundry because they had somebody do the laundry for them. So it was a very interesting experience. Made many friends, didn't want to leave.
Was your contract, did you have to be there for a certain period of time?
You had to be two tours, they would call it.
And yes. What would
two,
be the length?
Two years.
So you would be there originally for 2 years, and then you could get a renewal?
Yes. Uh-huh,
okay.
Okay. And I was the last home economist on the job, and they let me stay an extra year because they were closing out Purdue part of the contract. And when the Purdue contract started with the home economics school, there were just two home economists from Purdue, and then they had the few more years, they had four. But in the meantime, the wives of the agriculture professors that were there in the with their families would help do the teaching, because there were no, we had no reservoir of teachers to draw from, because there weren't any others in Brazil. And so there were 40, at the time I was there in the 60s, there were 40 Purdue families there. And so we had quite a few willing volunteer professors, to ladies with experience of homemaking, to help us teach all the home economics subjects until we could get the first class graduated and send them to Purdue for their master's degrees. And they came back and started teaching. Well, in the last few, I never did teach Portuguese in the class. I operated the class and working with the professors more or less like a student teacher. We would work out the lesson, because she would know some English, I would know a little Portuguese, and then she, the new teacher, the student would, because she'd been to Purdue and, you know, had that much English, but she would teach in Portuguese. I would sit in the room and could understand enough of it, and we would converse back and forth, and we'd refer to each other, and we would teach together, but she had the main teaching responsibility in Portuguese, because the students, of course, didn't know
in English. They were, and it was very difficult to learn Portuguese because the students on campus, when you were with them, and the professors also, wanted to practice their English on us. So it was very hard for us to practice our Portuguese with them. So it was a, I still don't, I speak a very poor Portuguese. I made myself understood. Now my last tour there, I didn't do much teaching because we were closing out the Holmics part. And we had people that had come to Purdue and gotten their master's. So they've gone to a few other schools. Some went to Cornell, some to Ohio State, some to Iowa and Missouri, but most of them came to Purdue. And so we had teachers that were that had their master's and were well prepared to teach. Mm-hmm. And so we were bringing more Purdue families there, and we were working out in what we would call here regional campuses, the dairy farm and the horticulture farms that were away from the campus. We were bringing home Purdue people there. So I had the pleasure of traveling and buying furniture, furnishing houses, and training. Well, my driver would help find the maid service and the gardeners, and then I would help train them in the way that their new employers would want them to perform, and help them understand the strange ways of the Americans, and try to break the ground for the new families that were coming. Then we would go to Rio and meet them, take them through customs and through the embassy procedures, and take them out to Viçosa, which sometimes would take 2 days, according to the weather, how muddy the roads were, and how much we had to lay over someplace until the roads were fit to travel.
What, that's sort of in the interior of the country.
Very much.
Is the university still goes?
Oh, yes. They now, the roads are much improved, and the agriculture is much improved, and the forestry and so forth, and they now have a veterinary school, and they give their own bachelor's, master's, and PhDs, so they're very much on their own. Sure. They still invite us back, and we invite them up here, but it's a much, much different place. The university is just unbelievable.
It's grown physically, the physical plant.
Yes, uh-huh.
The students that were there when you were there, where did they come? Did they come from where?
From all over the country.
Country?
Okay. Uh-huh. All over.
What was the school?
All over South America, because it was the only home economics school in existence. And we helped, and I helped to do that too, in the southern part of Brazil and Rio Grande do Sul. We helped develop a home economics department in a university. And we helped Ohio State and Purdue together help develop a home economics department at São Paulo. Very, very progressive university.
Nice contacts.
Oh,
do you,
yes.
Do you still keep in touch with some of the...
Oh, yes, yes.
Have you visited there?
Some of my very, very best friends are Brazilians.
What was it like living there? Did you live on the campus? Did you have an apartment?
Well, a very different living situation. In Brazil, professors live in what they call the professor's villa. The university has their own housing, and we lived in professor's villa.
Were these apartments?
Yeah, little houses.
Houses?
Yes, because you had whole families.
So you had a house to yourself?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes.
How far?
Now, sometimes the home economists would share a house, but it would be a double house, and so it was really separated, but mm-hmm. it would be...
What was student life there like? Were there activities?
Soccer. Pooch Ball. And they had a recreational center, where they had a pool and various kinds of
Did the students interact? Were there clubs or anything of that sort?
Not as much as we have here and as much as they have now because of the American influence.
Mm-hmm. It was a smaller.
Yeah, because, see, the students would come to the United States to study and they discover how, of course, that's how the whole process started, was professors in agriculture would come to the United States and they discovered Purdue and Ohio State and Cornell and some of the other land-grant colleges, and just Purdue was the one that made the contract with USAID and the Brazilian government and got the mm-hmm. school started.
Were there other schools in agriculture and home and economics that were involved in this program, or was it just those two? Were there the sciences at all involved?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
So they also went down to...
All gas chemistry professors.
Mm-hmm.
In a strong chemistry program when I was there.
Did you get the chance to travel around the country when you were there?
I didn't travel as much as a lot of the families did, just mainly because I wanted to be with Brazilians and I really wasn't there as a tourist. And so I spent more of my time with the professors and their families there in the villa. And of course there were many Brazilian families that are in the villa as well as the American families. And then I got, my traveling was like when I went to Rio Grande do Sul for almost a semester to help develop that school, our home management department. And then, of course, when you travel as a Purdue home economist down there, if the foods and nutrition department needed some help, whether that was your major emphasis or not, you work with those professors.
Sure.
We work across the board, but my main object was developing the home management program. And then, in addition, we would have professors that wanted us to help them start high schools. They didn't have high school home economics either, of course. And so I did that around in the state of Minas Gerais. I worked with about three different high schools in helping them set up programs.
In that general area there?
Yes.
Or Minas Gerais is close to Azusa?
Yes. Yeah. Well, it would be like if I would go and set up a high school from Lafayette, go to Kokomo or down to Crawfordsville, about that distance. Of course, the distance of farmers' travel was farther. But it was, and some of my very best friends are people I've worked with in Brazil.
That's nice. And you've kept in touch?
Oh, yes. Yeah, they come here. Yeah. They visit. They're friends of my family, and they visit my family in Connersville. And particularly the girls that have come back to get their PhDs here. Those are probably my closest friends. For instance, one of my very best friends there calls my family her foster family. And playing on the words foster, knowing what it means in English, and that being their name. I think my family keeps up with her probably and keeps contact with her as much or more than I do.
Than I do.
Uh-huh.
That's nice.
Yes.
It was a nice experience.
Oh, I loved it. I didn't want to come home, but I didn't want to lose my citizenship. I still...
Were you able to come back to the States in the meantime during your contract?
I came back for one summer, went to conventions on the West Coast, and I traveled practically the whole summer I was here because I was gathering information and recruiting. recruits and doing some kinds of work for the university to spread the word that they have good students there, that they make good graduate students, and
right.
You know,
doing a little field work.
Oh yes, and so that was. Then I had to go back early because I had a new family coming in to go out to one of these satellite schools that I knew they needed my driver, Jose, and me to usher them around. And so I cut my visit short. And then at the end, when I was, leaving for good, they let me set the date that I was going to leave. And I went just as far as I could go, and then I forgot there were 31 days in October, so I came on October the 30th. I was very disgusted that I cheated myself one day in Brazil.
You won't do that again, right?
Right, okay.
A couple things. Is there any memorable event in your life that you'd like to, that you recall, you're reminiscing?
Oh, my. There's so many of them that have been thinking about these interviews, and I keep thinking of things that I hadn't thought of for a long time. And then I would think, well, did that happen when I was an undergraduate or a graduate student? And I'd get the records out and check, and then in doing that I would think, oh, I'd forgotten about that,
This is your chance.
Probably can't recall any of those things right now when I want to. I think probably seeing the changes later, not while they were going on. For instance, when I was an undergraduate, we could not walk across the Memorial Mall from what is now Stonehall, Matthews Hall, over to Stewart Center area. Well, it wasn't Stewart Center, that was the Union, because you could not walk on that green oval. That was for ROTC drill and exhibitions, for putting the wreath on John Perdue's grave and Gale Week and things like that. You would be fined, and it would be a $5 fine. And at that time, you maybe bought two books for $5. $5 was a stiff fine. And so when they started putting the sidewalks across the mall, every time I walk across there, I think what it would be costing me. And then now, students can't imagine not being able to walk across there. Well, we had to all walk. We had to, around the oval, we could walk around. And that's how Hello Walk started. It was not where it is now,
Around from State Street it would come in.
Yeah, that's right. Uh-huh. Around in front of Stanley Corder Hall. And
then over to the University Hall.
Yeah, that's right.
That's any other tradition. That's very interesting. I had not heard that.
Yeah, that before. That was, that, and of course dress is one thing. Like, going to the music hall, well, I better back up, because the music hall wasn't built except until it was being built while I was an undergraduate. And, of course, Fowler Hall was the large meeting place, as well as areas in the Vermont Union. But the things like that, the football stadium was not there. It played football in between what is now Elliott and the Armory. That was the football field. And, and then as things like that changed, you don't think about it while you're there as a change is going on. But then as time goes on, you think how different it is. I'm sure that will continue to be that way.
Change
everywhere.
Right, yeah. Are there any questions that I failed to ask that you want to raise?
No.
Or any topics you want to return to?
I can't think of any at the time.
But overall, you're
pretty much rambled on and on.
No, I think that you did really.
Because as I think of things, and I always have to back it up with a preface because it doesn't, you know, you can't start in the middle of things. So I've been here so long.
We talked earlier about Chauncey Village, but I think one thing that I would like, how has Lafayette changed since you've been here?
Oh, you mean Lafayette?
Yeah, Lafayette.
Oh, well, of course.
That kind of will work
from,
out with Chauncey.
From the village down the hill and over across the river, that has, you know, changed completely. There wasn't anything there except floodland and
no buildings?
And no.
At the foot of State Street and the River Road?
No, not until the, pizza. Can't say that.
Oh, Bruno?
Bruno's was built. That was the first building down there I can remember.
Wow.
And
were there gas stations? Were there any gas stations?
Yeah, oh, yes.
Sure.
But gas stations everywhere that they aren't now, you know. I wonder, with all the cars we have now around, there's not as many gas stations as there used to be. Yeah.
There was the one there, right near Cranard. I used to use it. Bill Davis had
right,
that one there, right across from the bookstore.
Yes, there. Right. Where Ross Hall is.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Bill Davis had
that. Yes, right. Yes, the village has changed. And then, as you say, across in Lafayette, of course, Lafayette. We go to the mall now. We used to go downtown, down to downtown Lafayette to the courthouse, stores around the courthouse, department stores, and jewelry stores, and gift shops. And
downtown has really changed to some extent because there really aren't a lot of those facilities there anymore.
No.
You have to go to the mall.
You have to go to the mall somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The Walmart or someplace.
Right.
Which the kind of, well, and the other thing has changed a lot are the availability of grocery stores. That still, I think, I can't understand why there we need more grocery facilities close to where the students are living because they're not everybody has access to the vehicle, and buses are all right, but buses are not good for grocery shopping.
That's right. Exactly.
And that is a great. There were, of course, grocery stores in the village, and then down as the bill after the levee built up, and we had some businesses down there. We had Smitty's Grocery down there, you know. It's very difficult for people without cars and.
Yeah.
Needing groceries.
Okay. Any closing remarks or comments for the researchers that are going to be able to share with us?
I've thoroughly enjoyed this, and I think I like the idea of Purdue putting more emphasis on the history of the university, and I think this will spur me on to go on and develop the files and the memorabilia labeling and so forth that I have, and get it into the archives to commemorate a little bit more of what Home Management House was and some of the other things that are the school.
They're key to the development and growth of the school.
Oh, definitely.
Right. Good. Thank you very much. This concludes the interview.